All right, everybody, welcome back to your favorite new podcast, Leonard's Flick Fix. I'm your host, Leonard Cox, and on this podcast, I bring you essential movie summaries packed with all the key plot points, character insights, cinematic details, and those big moments. This is where you get the full story in a quick, easy format, so you can stay in the loop with all the movie talk between your friends and family.
He summarizes movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime. Flick.
All right, let's dive into today's movie, Limitless, the sci-fi thriller directed by Neil Berger. And as always, I'll read the IMDb description summary. A mysterious pill that enables the users to access 100% of his brain's abilities transforms a struggling writer into a financial wizard, but it also puts him in a new world with many dangers. There is our summary of this very awesome, very unique, very relevant sci-fi thriller, Limitless. Okay, here we go, everybody. Limitless. So I'm going to skip the exact intro that they have because, believe it or not, it's one of those ending scenes. So it's the ending scene that is the intro scene, which is a really cool way to do it. But for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to head and start at the story start, which is with Edward Mora, also played by Bradley Cooper. Edward Mora is a writer in New York City, extremely disheveled and very, honestly, very ugly at this moment. He's very long-haired, very greasy, and nothing's going right. Clearly, everything's going wrong. He's bored in his apartment. He's doing absolutely nothing, and he can't seem to write a single word on his computer to start this book contract that he's got going on in New York. Nothing's going for him, and he says, and this is a narration, he narrates in his own head as well, and he says the only thing that he has going for him is his girlfriend Libby. And then, of course, we do a quick cut to Libby handing her keys over to Edward, essentially saying, I'm breaking up with you. Edward says, you know, I'm just about to turn in my pages, you know, and I'm going to get a big break here. Give me some, you know, give me a chance. And Libby says, listen, I love you, but you're a mess. And I can't keep taking care of you. I pay for your rent. I clean you up. I clean the apartment. It makes sense. And, you know, he says, you know, I was just about to propose to you. And again, this conversation is almost like friendly. It's like Edward, our main character, Eddie, you know, he's not even crying. He's not really that upset because he honestly understands. He's in a mass depression. And he wants what's good for Libby, and it's not even like a sad thing. He's like, so what's going on with you and work? Did you get the job? And Libby's like, I got it. And they're, you know, they're smiling and they're laughing at each other, but she leaves and says, take care of yourself, Eddie. And Eddie's still smiling because he's happy that she's got her job. And honestly, who could blame her for leaving him? That's how he's kind of feeling at this moment. Depressed, but happy for his now ex-girlfriend, Libby. So then we get, you know, Eddie walking down the street in New York City, trying to understand how to live life at this point. He literally has nothing going for him. And he runs into his ex-wife's brother. So his ex-brother-in-law on the street, who is this drug dealer. He was a drug dealer, I guess, and technically, quote-unquote, still is. He works for pharmaceutical distribution or whatever now. So they run into each other, and the ex-brother-in-law is asking Eddie how he's doing. He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm writing in New York. And the brother-in-law is obviously not really biting because he looks horrible. So they say, come on, let me buy you a drink. Let's talk. So they go in the bar, they talk, and the brother-in-law says, I think I've got something for you. And Eddie says, no, I don't want this. I don't want the drugs. I don't want drugs that you're going to give me. You know, it's clearly that you're still dealing. And he says, Eddie, and this brother-in-law, he's a very slick-looking dude. He's in a, you know, nice tux. He's clearly got his life together. He's got some good stuff. So he goes, Eddie, I've got to go because he just answered a phone call and clearly something's going on with this guy's work. So he goes, Eddie, I've got to go, but let me throw you a bone. Here, take this. And he hands him this clear-looking pill and his phone number. And he says, we have to do this again, Eddie. This was great. Go ahead and take this on me. And then he says, Eddie says, I don't want this. I don't want some random drug that's, you know, even though he says it's FDA approved, quote unquote, I don't want this drug. And he goes, don't do a discourtesy to me, Eddie. It's $800 a pill. Okay, gosh. And we also learned that Eddie's ex-wife, who divorced him 5 minutes into their marriage, essentially, is not doing well either. She has two kids. The husband left her, and apparently she's not doing great. But anyways, Eddie's essentially at mass depression at this point, and he's walking into his really ugly Chinatown his apartment, and he pulls out the pill, and he narrates to himself, honestly, how much worse can it get? So he pops the pill and walks into the apartment, and as he's walking in the apartment, he runs into the landlord's wife, and she is just yelling at him. And Eddie starts getting a little anxiety because he's like, I don't know what pill I just swallowed. I asked very little about what the side effects of this pill were. Was it a hallucinogen? What am I imagining things? It's like someone taking a pill for, I mean, it's like taking drugs for the first time. What's going to happen? And all of a sudden, it hits Eddie. So like 30 seconds later, essentially, it hits him. And what it is, it's this, like, you can see everything, you understand everything, and you're able to access 100% of your brain instead of the quote-unquote 20% that the average people access. And what's really, really cool, side note about this, cinematography and DP and the directing of all of it's so cool, is when Eddie, our main character, is not on, quote, NZT is the pill, that's the name of it, NZT, when he's not on NZT, the color grade of the film is very dull, very gray. It's an amazing way to look at life in depression, essentially. And as Eddie comes to, and not comes to, as Eddie's, you know, getting high from NZT, the colors are super saturated, very colorful, very bright colors. Now, note, Eddie is still very gross and disheveled, but everything just looks cleaner, and just the color grading is amazing. So he's now high on the NZT, and he just starts noticing everything, hearing everything around him. And the lady's still yelling at him, and then he stops her in her tracks, and he's like, why are you mad at me? And then she's like, excuse me? And then he goes, I understand that you're mad at me. Look at me. I'm a disheveled piece of shit who doesn't pay any rent, and I get that. But there's more to this. Why are you mad at me? And then he looks into her bag, and he sees like this School of Law book, like the title of a book that somehow he remembered from when he was like 15 from some random desk. Because apparently on NZT, everything that you've seen essentially gets stored up. So he, using his intelligence and NZT drug, he like essentially woos her and says, let me help you with your, you know, he's spitting off all these crazy facts and knowledge about law, and he's recommending this. So he helps her write this law paper. And, you know, he's like amazed. So then after he distracts her and has sex with her, actually, he goes into his apartment, and it's an absolute pigsty. It's disgusting. He walks in and he's like, how can anyone think or do anything with a mess like this? And it's a cool montage of Eddie just cleaning up his room and cleaning up the apartment because he's high on NZT, and he's like, he's got more drive than ever. And I want to note another cool thing. When Eddie is at 100% capacity and able to do everything he wants to do, the first thing that he does, the first thing is clean up his area. I think that's a very cool psychological concept that we could look into later on in a different podcast, but very cool idea. Now, he doesn't go, you know, do all these other things. His first thing is to get to unclutter his room, to unclutter his brain. Very cool. Okay, so now that he's uncluttered his room, he's thinking, well, what else should I do with this NZT? How long does it last? I don't know. But I better get writing, because he's a writer, right? And this author in the book publisher is waiting for him to pump out pages and at least give them something, because he's about to lose his job and go live with his parents. So using NZT, the same pill that he took from the, you know, ex-brother-in-law, he's pumping out words, papers. And then we get, after he's done, he goes to sleep. We see him wake up, and it's the same really dull colors again. So we know he's no longer high on NZT. And he's waking up, and he's essentially narrating with himself, saying, I tried to find some type of intelligence in the back of my brain, but it's gone. It's all a foggy haze. And it truly was just, you know, just the pill giving me intelligence, essentially, giving me my intelligence. But something was left behind. He had written like half of the book in one night and gives it to his publisher, and the publisher doesn't believe it. He says, all right, Just read a little bit. And if you don't want to keep turning the page, you can take my deposit. You can take my job. You can take everything. You can take my deposit, whatever. He has that much confidence in it. So he gets out on the street. He leaves. He comes home. And he arrives. And the answering machine has three messages on it. The first one is the publisher saying, Eddie, call me. I'm three pages in. Then the next one is, Eddie, wow, this is actually pretty good. I'm still reading. I don't know how you're doing this. And then the third one is, Eddie, call me. This is unbelievable. You've done something here. Call me now. So then Eddie, instead of picking up the, he picks up the phone, but then sets it down because he's like, whoa, I can't talk to this person not on NZT. I don't have the intelligence. I don't think I could continue writing this book. So he does what would any person do after having an experience like that? You go to the source and you go get some more NZT. So he goes, uses the card that the brother-in-law gave him, and he meets him at the brother-in-law's house. The brother-in-law opens the door reluctantly because he's got a bashed-in face and he's all beat up now all of a sudden. So Eddie's like, what happened? Are you okay? And, you know, brother-in-law's just playing it off cool, but he's, you know, kind of angry at himself. And Eddie essentially says, I need some more NZT. And he goes, you know, the brother-in-law is like, oh, yeah, of course you need some more NZT. Obviously, it's an amazing drug. It's crazy. And we learn that it's not FDA approved. It's essentially made in some random-ass lab, and it's like no one's really tested it all that much. So it's truly a random drug. So the brother-in-law says, go get me some breakfast and go get my stuff dry cleaned, and then I'll probably give you some NZT. So Eddie's like, screw it. Whatever chance I get to go get the NZT, I'll do it. I'll be your maid. So he goes out, gets the dry cleaning, gets the breakfast. And on his way back, he notices that the brother-in-law's house has been ransacked. And the brother-in-law has been shot in the head. He's dead in his apartment, and Eddie's the first one to discover him. And the place is a mess. Eddie does what any normal person would do, and he panics. He freaks out. He realizes that maybe someone's in the apartment, but he also realizes that they're not there. And then he immediately calls the police. And then as he was sitting there waiting for the police to show up, he realized that these people that ransacked his place were looking for NZT, and it looks like they didn't find it. Because obviously, who wouldn't look for it? So then he's you know, looking around the apartment frantically before the cops show up, and he's, you know, trying to find it, and he sits down, and he grabs the breakfast burrito, and he goes, why didn't you just cook eggs? You know, why didn't you just cook something? And then he had a realization, you're stashing it in the oven. So he finds a bunch of money and a bunch of NZT stashed in the oven. He pockets it. The cops show up, and he is able to get away and go to the cops, you know, to the police station, essentially, to answer the questions about the death of his brother-in-law. The detective is a little suspect about it, but nothing crazy. And the detective gets a phone call from Eddie's ex-wife, the sister of the brother who just died. So Eddie talks to his ex-wife for the very first time in a long time. And she says essentially, I hope you didn't, you know, do any drugs with my brother, because there's some really dangerous stuff out there. And she does not want to see Eddie at all. But Eddie wants to see her very badly. He says, I'll see you at the funeral. She says, please don't show up at the funeral. I can't handle that right now. So Eddie is kind of confused, but he goes home, and then he's now got a massive bag of NZT and a bunch of money. So he pops the NZT, he goes out and takes a walk, because why wouldn't you? And he realizes, he looks himself in the mirror and he's like, wow, I look disheveled as hell. So of course he goes, gets himself cleaned up, gets some really nice stuff. Now he looks like a really good Bradley Cooper, and he puts on, you know, a bunch of really nice, you know, clothing, suits, all that good stuff. And he's made a stash of his NZT. He learns the piano. He learns languages. He's running. And he finishes his book in four days. And the publisher loves it. And it's going to be released in a year. He's able to meet girls quickly. He's able to diagnose his aunt's illness. And he's just a genius. And then he shows up in some party where he's talking to a bunch of stockbrokers. And they're all incredibly fascinated with what he has to say. And he's clearly come across some type of stock, you know, business guy who's pretty high up, and gives him his card, says, call me if you ever, you know, want to create a portfolio with us. So then Eddie, you know, again, still just enjoying life because he's been such in a depression. He just goes on a vacation with some random people, drives some fancy ass cars with some beautiful women. And he does this crazy, like he says, the only side effect that he has felt so far is that he feels like he has to keep going all the time. And if he doesn't keep going, his head's going to like explode. So he's always doing something constantly. So he arrives at literally a cliff with his group of friends in like Fiji. And he's like, has anyone jumped off? And then they're like, no, because it's a dumb idea. But Eddie, because he can't stop, he goes, screw it. And he jumps off, jumps in the water. And in that panic and in the free fall, he's okay. But he realizes something. He realizes that there's something he needs to do greater than just enjoy life at the moment. He has this big, massive plan now. We don't know what it is yet, but he's got a big plan. So he goes straight to the stock market and he starts making money. In his first day, he turns $800 into $2,500. He turns that $2,500 into $7,200, but he's realizing that that's not quick enough capital for him to do what he wants to do. And no bank would give him a loan because he's essentially a nobody right now. So he goes to the mob or some Russian mob guy and gets a loan from this guy, $100,000. It's a sketchy situation, and he uses mind games to essentially not be smart with this guy, because this guy doesn't want to hear anything about why he would give him the money. He just wants to, you know, give him the money and then beat the shit up out of him, because that's, you know, the stereotype. So he gets a bunch of money, he gets a bunch of capital, and he calls up that stockbroker guy, and he gets a chair in Wall Street, and he just goes nuts. He turns $100,000 into like $2.5 million, and everyone is just in awe. And he gets these phone calls from, you know, New York Times, all over the place. He's getting all these phone calls from all these famous people. And then he gets a phone call with this big, massive, like the top guy. He's going to have a meeting with him and see if he can be part of his firm. But before that happens, he goes and has a nice dinner with his ex-girlfriend, Libby, that was introduced, who they had a really good rapport with each other. But because she broke up with him because he wasn't right. But now he's really right and on track. So he wants to show her that he's got new languages. He's impressing her left and right. And she's very happy. So they get back together and they just, you know, it's a montage of them essentially having sex and being happy for quite some time. Actually, that's just the night. It's just one night. It's quite funny. So he gets ready for the meeting with some big hotshot guy in the stock world. And as they're enjoying each other, he sees that he's in the paper as like some god in the stock market. And, you know, he's literally being, you know, recognized everywhere all of a sudden. He's becoming very famous. And that's how he got the status of meeting this guy. But on his way to this meeting, there's some weird, ugly dude, like the Shining looking dude, following them every once in a while. But it's, again, no big deal. And right before the meeting as well, he's getting a little bit dizzy. And all of a sudden, he just appears in the hallway. Very strange. And his girlfriend says, like, Eddie, what are you doing out here? And he goes, I don't know, I'm coming back to bed. So it was just like this weird skip of time. And we'll get back to that in a second. So then we cut to the big meeting where Eddie is very casual, but his buddy who set it up is like, you are way too casual. This is like the biggest dude out there. You gotta, you know, be way more casual. The meeting goes incredibly well. And there's one guy who doesn't believe a thing that Eddie's saying. And the big head guy, who's played by Robert De Niro, by the way, Robert De Niro's character is kind of impressed, but his accomplice is like, this guy's full of shit. But anyways, Eddie impresses Robert De Niro, and in this meeting, he's able to lock in another meeting to kind of have like a quote-unquote test run. So in this test run, he's in the car with Robert De Niro, face-to-face. Robert De Niro hands him a portfolio, and then he says, what do you think of this? And Eddie looks through it, and he's like, blah, 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 and he's reading it super fast. He's learning, you know, he's super fast because he's on NZT. And then he's like, this is a test because you don't want me to be looking at this. You think, you know, there's some merger happening. There's some big, crazy merger. And so he finds out the plot of Robert De Niro De Niro's character, essentially. He wants to merge. Robert De Niro's character, the big stockbroker, big business guy, huge business guy, is going to merge with another big, huge business guy, and they're just going to essentially, like, monopolize the stocks. They're going to monopolize any kind of money in the city by, like, putting too big. It's like putting Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos together, kind of like crazy big, big thing. So Robert De Niro's character is like, you are a crazy kid. I don't know how the hell you're doing this, but you're insane. So they drop him off at Eddie's really run-down house, and Eddie's going to walk off all this excitement. And as he's walking off this excitement, it's a montage of him just skipping in time. All of a sudden, he's skipped 10 blocks. All of a sudden, he's skipped, like, a couple miles. And all of a sudden, it's nighttime. He's partying, and he has no idea what's going on. And then he sees the guy that has been following him every once in a while, but it's, you know, not a big deal. It's nothing crazy that's happened. All of a sudden, he's out having sex with some random girl, and no, he's in a relationship with Libby. So he has this big meeting coming up, so he falls asleep, and then he wakes up, like, blacked out from the past 18 hours. He just literally forgot the past 18 hours. He has no idea what happened, essentially. And so he's like, oh my God, I'm going to be late to this big ass meeting with Robert De Niro. This is like the one to get me hired and get me in it. And then he calls his friend, the guy who got on the job. He's like, dude, I can't make it. I am super sick right now, because Eddie looks bad now. It's dull colors. He's not on NZT. He's sweating. He's coughing. He just does not look healthy whatsoever. And so he's like, I can't make this. And then his friend's like, you make this. If you get hit by a car, you still make this job. This is you. Just go. You make it. So Eddie's trying to make sense of these papers that Robert De Niro's character sent to him, trying to, like, study up for this big meeting without NZT, because he just realized that NZT kind of has a pretty bad side effect. He just missed 18 hours of his day. So he says, screw it, I'll be there. So he shows up and he tries to have a conversation with Robert De Niro off NZT. And he's very, like, super massively hungover. Robert De Niro asks him a question or two, and he is just, he's kind of answering it, but boy, it's pretty spotty here and there. And as it's happening, as Robert De Niro is talking to him, kind of, you know, disappointed in him, he's looking at the TV, and he looks up at the TV, and he sees that a woman has been murdered. Not only just a woman, but the woman that he just cheated on with Libby is dead. So he just immediately starts sweating and freaking out. And Robert De Niro's like, hello, hello, are you paying attention to me here? And then he says, give me a moment. Eddie's like, give me a moment. I gotta go. He, like, panics, freaks out. He leaves and he walks out the building. He just throws up because he is in a all-out panic that he had just killed somebody. He has no idea if he killed anybody or not. He hasn't the slightest of clues because he forgot the past 18 hours. But he does know one of the girls he was having sex with is dead now. So he goes back to his house and he's like, all right, I gotta learn more about NZT. This is actually very serious now all of a sudden. And one of the things he stole from his ex-wife's brother, his ex-brother-in-law's place, was the little black book that he had with the money and the NZT. And he starts calling people on the black book because he realizes that these were probably people that wanted NZT. So he goes, takes it to the park. He's always looking over his shoulder. He's very sweaty, very ill. He just got in a massive fight in his hangover time, in his, like, 18-hour forget time. He has no idea what really happened, but he's all, like, bloody and beat up. And the color is very dull and gray because he's not on NZT. And he starts calling every number on the black book, and they're either three of them are dead and the rest of them are extremely sick. And then he calls one last number. And then there's a phone that rings next to him at the park bench. He looks over and it's the guy that has been following him. It's the guy that has been following him's phone and the guy that's been following him right next to him. He realizes that that's the guy that he just called had been following him. So clearly this guy who's been following him has to do with NZT somehow. So Eddie realizes it, and he just starts booking it. And he's limping, he's sweating, he's, like, throwing up while he's sprinting. And this guy is all out sprint, shining, chasing this guy. So it's a chase scene between Eddie and some random old shining-looking dude just, like, sprinting after each other. Eddie is able to sneak away and, like, flee the scene by running into a taxi and got rid of him. And he calls his ex-wife, the brother-in-law's sister, his ex-wife, and he says, "I need to talk to you. I'm in bad shape. Like, I'm in really bad shape." And she goes, have you been taking NZT? And he's like, yeah. So they go meet up at the diner, and she looks horrible, just like Eddie. He looks really shitty. She looks really shitty. And she said, "Yeah, it is great. I was on NZT too for a while. And it's amazing. I was doing amazing things, and it's amazing. But I realized that no human being can use 100% of their brain and not have any repercussions. So I started weaning off of it. I stopped taking it, and I got really sick, and I wasn't able to walk for a while, and now I can't think for any longer than 5 minutes at a time, and I'm just a disaster." She literally looks like a skeleton, and her mentals are all sorts of screwed up. So she's looking at Eddie, and she's like, "How long have you been on it? How much have you been taking?" And Eddie goes like, "I've taken a lot." He was taking double doses. He was taking triple doses. He was taking a lot of NZT. So she essentially says, you gotta like, maybe it was a different batch. Maybe you got lucky. Maybe you're going to be okay. But if I were you, I wouldn't stop taking it, because you're going to die. You have to find a better way out. Try to take it and slowly wean yourself off of it, because that might be the only way for you to sustain yourself." So after this meeting, Eddie's on his way, walking back to the apartment, and who shows up but the mobster. The mobster shows up and goes, "Where's my money, buddy? You haven't paid me my money." And Eddie was too occupied with his, you know, all of his riches that he hadn't paid him the money. He's like, "I'll go to the ATM right now. I'm going right now." And he brings him up to his room, and he starts beating the shit out of him. And as he's beating the shit up out of him, one of the NZT pills pops up out of his hand, out of Eddie's hand, and onto the floor. And the Russian guy's like, "Now what do you have here?" And then Eddie's like, "Oh, it's just Advil, you know, whatever." And so the Russian guy's like, no, this isn't Advil. Let's see what we got." So he just pops the motherfucker. He puts it in his mouth and swallows some random-ass drug without knowing a single thing about it. So Eddie's like, "What are you doing, you crazy bastard?" So Eddie's not on NZT, and now this Russian mobster is. But he doesn't know what it is. So Eddie quickly goes and, you know, gets the mobster the money, hands him the money, and the mobster's like, "Whoa, what is this? This feels awesome." But Eddie's like, "It's just Advil," and then, like, essentially leaves. So Eddie's, like, really, really, really sick, because he hasn't had NZT in a while. He's freaking out, and he runs to his girlfriend's work. And he essentially runs into his girlfriend's office, like, sweating, vomiting, freaking out. And he spills the beans. He's like, "I am super, super mega sick. I need you to do something for me. I need you to go get my pills. They're called NZT. They're the reason why I'm doing crazy stuff." And she's like, "Okay, I'll do this just once, but this is ridiculous. Where are the pills?" And Eddie's like, "I stashed them in your house." And she's like, "You fucking asshole." So he runs. I mean, so he's, like, essentially passing out in her office while she is getting the NZT in her office. She got the NZT in the taxi, but guess who's following her? But the weird shining guy in a taxi behind her. She's stuck in New York traffic, and all of a sudden this dude gets out of the taxi and starts walking over to her. And she recognizes that he's been following her. So she calls Eddie and is like, "This guy's following me, Eddie." He's like, Eddie's, like, pretty much dying, so he's not really replying all that well. And then he opens her door, in her taxi door, and she just starts sprinting. This dude is all out chasing these people. So he is full out sprint chasing her through New York City, and it's crazy. She's able to hide behind some rocks in New York City and calls Eddie again and is like, "Eddie, what do I do? This is crazy. I'm not sure what to do. He's right here." And he lost her. He's not, like, he's in the area but can't see her. So Eddie says, "Go into your purse and take one of the pills." And she's like, "I'm not going to be able to just get on drugs right now, whatever." He's like, "Go into your purse, take one of the pills." So she says, "Screw it. I'm going to die. I'm probably going to die anyways. Might as well just take this pill." So she takes the pill, and we get another experience. You know, she's 180 degrees. She's, like, the color is unbelievable again, very saturated and very beautiful. She can hear everything, like, a mile away, and she knows exactly what to do. So what she does is she sprints, like, towards this ice rink. She's able to jump some stuff, and the guy sees her chasing her as well, and she's able to grab one of the ice skates and, like, slice this dude's, like, face, essentially, and get away. She gets in to her her work and gives Eddie an NZT pill. So Eddie's survived it. He's alive. And they go into this hotel room and spend the night there. She essentially says, Eddie, this is, I mean, Eddie's like, oh, thank God you did it. I'm back. I'm here. We did it. I'm okay. I've got us covered from here on out. And she's like, yo, this is not you. This is you on NZT. And I can't be a part of this. And so Eddie's like, what are you talking about? But he understands again and lets her leave, almost like they're broken up again, because that makes sense. So Eddie now has his NZT back. He's comfortable, aware of what's going on, and now understands that if he takes a small amount every once in a while, eats some food and whatever, he can keep a consistent high and not get sick, essentially. So he hires some bodyguards, and he's like back on his, you know, stock market change. So he goes back to Robert De Niro's character and he goes, listen, I was 105. I had 105 degree temperature. I'm super sick. I sent over those recommendations from the paperwork that you sent me that I was supposed to talk to you about in that meeting. Did you get a chance to look at them? And Robert De Niro is like pissed, but he's like, listen, you're a genius. And I fired a bunch of dudes because of those, you know, evaluations that you sent me. Let's work on this thing together, essentially. So they essentially work together now. Robert De Niro and Eddie are working together. And in behind the scenes, Eddie is talking to a doctor. And he's like, how do you remanufacture these pills? Is there a way you can do this without side effects? And he gives him like $2 million because now Eddie's super filthy rich from the stocks to, you know, try to make some stuff. In the meantime, he's going out to like lunch with some clients, and the detective from earlier calls him in over, you know, he notices him. He says, and he's like, I thought we had this cleared up, detective. I wasn't a part of the, you know, the murder of my, you know, ex-wife's, you know, brother-in-law. He's like, well, this isn't what it's about. He shows him the newspaper that he was in, and he says, the witness from that girl that was murdered said that this is the person that he saw leave the room, which was Eddie. So we know that Eddie had some part to do with the woman's murder. So we hire some top-notch attorney. They go in, and we learn that the attorney says they don't have a lot going on it. So we're probably going to get you out, but, you know, we'll see what we can do. So Eddie ends up, you know, he's at the like prime of his life, essentially doing this massive merger, some unheard of merger between these two massive companies. He's got plenty of NZT. He's got his health now. I mean, he's just got to worry about, you know, keeping his health as healthy as possible. So he creates a bunch of suits that have this like nice pocket in them to hide his NZT. And note that this merger between Robert De Niro and this other company, the CEO of this other company was like this crazy meteoric rise, like wonder kid. He was a genius. He's like just under 60, but extremely, like, he's super fragile looking, very old, like very, he's coughing during meetings every once in a while during the merger meetings. It's kind of confusing, but we'll get back to that in a second. So the merger is about to close. It's like a day and a half away. Robert De Niro's like, what are you going to do next, Eddie? And Eddie's like, well, you haven't given me something to do next, but I'm probably going to go, you know, move on. And, you know, Robert De Niro's like, you still have a lot to learn from me. You'd be dumb if you want to go against me, kind of thing. Like, he's not blackmailing him, but he's essentially saying, Eddie, you stay with me, that's the right decision. He's just, if you don't stay with me, you might be making a bad decision. It was a very real, serious talk. So Eddie had a meeting with the mobster, showed up again out of nowhere, and he's like, hey, mobster, I thought we were squared away. I gave you the money. The mobster's like, I want more of those pills, man. I want more of those pills. You come back here right now, or I'll tell the stock people about your little murder side thing. Because the stock people don't know that he's on, like, being investigated for murder, really. So on NZT, the mobster essentially was like, you give me more pills, or I will tell everyone how you got to the stock, you know, how NZT got you there, and that you're, you know, being investigated for murder. So Eddie gets with his security guards now, he gets like some really high-end vaulted, like this high-end vault apartment for like $8.5 million, beautiful skyscraper, really nice place in New York City. The merger's about to close, he's about to make $40 million, but all of a sudden, the other CEO gets sick. He gets sick. And the people are panicking, like, why is he not signed over this merger? the wife of the CEO comes in and says, "We're still intending to send, we're intending to close this deal, but my husband is very sick, and the moment he gets better, we'll sign over the deal." So in between all of this, Eddie goes and does one of those, you know, the mirrors where they're like double-sided mirrors in those police officers, where there's a bunch of people that look very similar. They put the numbers on, and then the witness who saw them will essentially be like, "Number four, please step forward," and number four will say like a line. So Eddie's in one of those. And because, you know, for the investigation of the murder, this is the big one. If the person can identify him, then he's kind of fucked. Anyways, he's in there just wearing his, you know, blue shirt along with, you know, seven other people. The guy doesn't identify him at all. And he's essentially scot-free from the murder. He's done with the murder. He gets his jacket back. He goes back into Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro's like, "Do you know anything about this? Do you know anything about the CEO guy, like, essentially being sick? He's in a coma now. Do you know anything what's going on? You keep leaving me. I'm not, you know, you're acting like I'm not noticing this, but, you know, what the hell's going on, Eddie?" And Eddie's like, "Get off of me, man. Get off me, Robert De Niro. I mean, can't I go live my life, do my other things, blah, blah, blah. I gotta take a pee." And so Robert De Niro's character is like, "So what do you want me to do? What should we do?" And Eddie's like, well, Eddie in his monologue is essentially saying, "Well, I don't really have too much NZT in my blood system right now, so I'm going to go take some blood. I'm going to go take some NZT." So he goes, takes a bathroom break, and he's looking in his jacket pocket for the NZT, and guess what's not there? His NZT isn't there. So he goes back into Robert De Niro's office, and he's like panicking a little bit, and some girl gives him a package that says "open urgently," and Robert De Niro's like yelling at Eddie for like leaving and doing some crazy shit. They're yelling back and forth. Eddie opens the package, and what is it? Both his security guard's hands cut off, severed into a box. So clearly the mobster got to his security guard, so he is unsafe. So Eddie immediately returns to his safe house in New York City. So as Eddie, you know, is watching TV in his house, like essentially completely sober, no NZT, he has no NZT. He's essentially trying to rethink how everything's going. The doorbell rings, and guess who it is but the mobster. So Eddie's in a safe house, essentially. So he feels fairly safe, but he's also in a panic. He has no cell phone reception, so he can't really call anybody. And these mobster guys are just screwing the hell out of the door and sawing it, and Eddie's like backed into a corner. He's on a penthouse, like he can't flee anywhere. So then we get the opening scene of Eddie standing on a skyscraper about to jump off, because he realizes that what these mobsters are about to do to him is going to be way worse than him like jumping off a building and at least ending it himself, because these mobsters are going to tear him apart until he gives them the NZT, which he doesn't have. So right when he's about to jump, right before, He inner monologues and says, and it's funny, the brain really wants you to survive. Your body wants you to survive. So right when I was about to kill myself, essentially, my brain went into like overdrive and tried to remember every last spot where some NZT might be. And he remembered that there was one little NZT pack that he hid from his first, like the first like one he stored away, hidden in one of the boxes that he hadn't unpacked yet. And he's able to find it right before the mobster shows up. And as the mobster breaks open the door, Eddie slips and drops the NZT through a vent, and it's gone. So the mobster and his two security guards enter Eddie's house, throw him onto a chair, the mobster's like, you know, super smart. He's on NZT, and he says, "You know, I don't like it that you're hiding from me. I only got this NZT left." And he's telling him, "You have been doing it wrong. You're supposed to boil the NZT into like a liquid, and then you're supposed to shoot it. It gets in the bloodstream faster, and you know, it stays in the bloodstream longer and stronger." So we watch him like brew up this like liquid NZT and shoot it into his arm. And as that's happening, his security guards are ransacking the house looking for extra packs of NZT, which Eddie obviously doesn't have. So as the mobster gets really close talking about flaying his skin, Eddie was able to sneakily grab a knife from all the boxes that he had ripped open trying to find that one little thing of NZT that he had dropped, and is able to stab the mobster in the chest extremely gruesomely, like horribly, and just does it. He's like, Eddie's like eyes wide open, super intense, super scared, and stabs him and kills him. and does it quietly enough where, again, this is a big house, so the other security guards of the mobsters couldn't really hear or see anything. But Eddie was like, well, it was a valiant effort, but I still have no NZT. And just because I killed this mobster doesn't mean I'm going to live, because I'm about to die because I have no NZT. Like, I'm literally dying, because that's how severe his hook is. If he doesn't have NZT in his bloodstream, he's essentially just going to die. And he's like, well, the last NZT that I could have possibly touched was in this mother, you know, this mobster's bloodstream, which sucks. And then as he says that, the camera does a great cinematography shot, really cool shot of the blood leaking out of the mobster. They're both lying down on the floor because Eddie's about to die. The mobster's already dead and, like, bleeding. And Eddie, we zoom in on Eddie's lips, and we see his lips, like, crawling as if they were its own people towards the puddle of blood from the mobster. And he starts licking and drinking up the blood of the mobster like a vampire off the floor. It is disgusting. He's slurping it. It's a great shot. It's a great shot. And within 30 seconds, of course, Eddie is back on NZT. So the security guards notice that, you know, something's been quiet. So one of the security guards runs in while Eddie is laying down next to the mobster. Eddie decides on NZT to play dead next to the mobster for a little bit. And he notices the needle that the mobster used to shoot, and he essentially puts it in his mouth and plays dead. So the security mobster is like, oh, mobster, are you okay? Are you okay? He's dead. And they rolls over Eddie, and Eddie goes like, and then the mobster goes like, what? And then he stabs the mobster security guard in the eyeballs with the, I should have mentioned, one of the security guards is, has one of a, he has a fake eye. It's obvious he has a fake eye. So he stabs the other good eye. So one of the mobster security guards is blind with a gun. The other mobster security guard is chasing Eddie all around his apartment with a gun. Eddie also has safe rooms and all this stuff. So he's able, again, on NZT, very smart, is able to disarm one of the security guards, beat the shit out of him. They're fighting next to the blind security guard. Blind shooting security guard. They're fighting. And Eddie is able to use, they don't speak English, so he uses like Russian language and goes like, he says, shoot, 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 while he's pointing the other mobster security guard at the blind guy's gun. And so the mobster blind guy shoots the other living mobster. And Eddie is able to kill the blind guy very easily. And then Eddie is able to, using the NZT that he's on, showers, gets himself cleaned up, and sees on the news that the CEO has died. I should rewind. He was missing his NZT because the lawyer that he had that got him out of the murder had stolen it from him. And we learned that that lawyer was the merger CEO guy. So we learned that the merger CEO guy was on NZT, didn't have any NZT, and that's why he kept getting frail and fragile. So that big come up from that merger had two NZT guys on it without even knowing that they were on NZT. Very creative, very interesting. So Eddie is able to track down the lawyer, and he's able to essentially bandage him up, kill him, and take the big pack of NZT. He finds it, and he's able to have it again. And then we get this big screen on. It says sometime later. And then we get all these cool cuts and, you know, shots of these pennants saying Edward Mora for New York City. And we can see that Eddie is running for senator of New York. He's running for senator. And he's this big hotshot. He's got a new clean cut. He looks really clean. Everyone's loving him. Everyone, like, they're not even going to run a second debate because he's crushing so heavily. No one's running against him. He's easily got this in the bag. And so as he's walking around, he's like, hey, I gotta grab a lunch, hold on. Everyone's trying to talk to him. He's like, sorry, I gotta grab a lunch. He goes and grabs a lunch, and guess who's in there but Robert De Niro, his old pal from the stocks. You know, even though the murder didn't work out, Robert De Niro did really well. Everything worked out. He just had recently bought this big energy firm. He just like some really weird out-of-pocket pharmaceutical manufacturing company with all the money. So then we immediately get Robert leaning in to Eddie, and he says, how long do you think you can keep this up? How long can you, you know, keep your stash? And so Eddie's like, what? How do you know about this? But he's not panicking. Eddie's not panicking. So Eddie closes the door, talks to Robert De Niro, and he's like, how long have you known? And Robert De Niro's character's like, I've known for a while. I've known for a while. And so Eddie's like, so what do you want from me? What's going on here? And Robert De Niro's like, well, clearly you're a genius. You're going in big places. You're probably going to hit the presidency, you know? So I'll just ask for a few favors here and then, and I will keep supplying you with NZT. And so he's like, wait a minute. So Eddie's not panicked again, not panicked, but he's like, so you are the one manufacturing the NZT. So, and Robert De Niro says, and I burnt down your stash. So we learned that Eddie had been hiring a bunch of pharmaceutical companies, essentially, to, like, private pharmaceutical companies to make his own stash of NZT. So Robert De Niro said, I burnt down your stash, and I'm the only one now who monopolizes the NZT. So I'll keep providing it for you as long as you give me a favor here and there as you run up to presidency, probably. And so Eddie, they take a walk outside, and Robert De Niro's like, Come have a lunch with me, kid. We'll talk about our future. And Eddie says, no, I'm good. And then Robert De Niro was like, what are you doing? You want to fight me? You can't fight me. I have your supply. You're going to die. You either want to be president or do you want to die? That's essentially what it is. And Eddie says, I don't need you, Robert De Niro. I'm off of it. I'm off of it, he says. He's saying he's no longer on NZT. Even though the colors of the movie are very saturated, but not as saturated, no, as what it was when he was on NZT. So Robert De Niro goes, you can't be off of it. I burnt down all your stash. I have everything. What are you talking about? And Eddie essentially just starts spitting knowledge. Like he can see the future almost in their like massive conversation back and forth between each other. Eddie's able to feel his heart rate, feel Robert De Niro's heart rate and tell him that he has like some blood pressure problems, but you already knew that. He can tell that he's lying. He looks at Robert De Niro and says, that van is going to rear in that taxi in 4 seconds because he's, you know, on the phone. He doesn't understand. He's distracted. And then Robert De Niro's like, what are you talking about? And then 4 seconds later, boom, the van rear ends the taxi. So Eddie has just, Eddie sees the future. He has figured out a way to get off of it and still be intelligent as hell at the same time. So whatever scientist or whatever thing he had done, he was able to twink it. He has no, apparently he's not on it, and he's still a genius, and he has no side effects. So Robert De Niro quickly learns that he's just been bested. He's been bested. There's nothing he can do because Eddie literally can see the fucking future. So Robert De Niro leaves. Eddie walks away with a grin, and then, you know, he goes, has a lunch. He has a lunch because that's what he had planned. He had planned not to have a lunch with Robert, but he had planned to have a lunch with Libby, his wife now, his, you know, the ex-girlfriend that we gone back and forth with. And Libby's back. She's happy. They're in love. And, you know, it's amazing to see Eddie, just as genius as he is, clearly going to make it to presidency with what seems to be no real problems except for Robert De Niro. And Robert De Niro doesn't even seem to be a problem. And that's the end credits of Limitless. I'll tell you, this was a this was a cool ass movie, folks. I thought this was just wicked cool. Yeah, I thought this was super, super cool. It got 7.4 out of 10 on IMDb, only 68% on Rotten Tomatoes. I understand why it got a 68, because like some plots just had to link up or it just didn't make any sense. But I'll tell you, I'm going to give this like an 83, maybe even higher. I thought it was really cool concept. It was amazing to show like how important, like how crazy addiction is. And, you know, it was just amazing. I thought the cinematography was beautiful. The color grade was, what a cool color, what a cool idea to go back and forth between dull colors and bright colors when you're high and when you're not. What a cool way to understand how the mind works at, quote, 100% 100% availability, how you would want to clean your room immediately. That also shows for those people who live in a pigsty, maybe you need to unclutter your room to unclutter your brain. I think that's, I mean, there's got to be some research in some of that. Great acting. Some of the running scenes were a little cheesy. The chasing scenes between Libby and, you know, the chaser guy. A little off there, but really, truly great writing, great story, great plot. 83, maybe even 85, I would say. I would put it up there. But this had a budget of only 27 million US dollars, which is pretty awesome. And the box office sales were $161.8 million. This was also released in 2011, just like one of the other podcasts I did called In Time 2011. This movie supersedes the In Time movie, but I really enjoyed doing podcasts on both. I think this is really cool. I think Lucy is going to be, got to be one of these ones where, you know, you occupy 100% of your mind. So very similar vibe as well. But everyone, thanks so much for listening. Keep listening. I'm on Apple Podcast. I'm on Spotify, Amazon, all that. Help me get to 1,000 downloads, will you? I would really super appreciate it. If you help me get to 1,000 downloads, I'll do whatever you want. keep commenting, keep texting me, keep calling me, keep emailing me. Tell me what movies you want me to do for you. Hopefully you guys keep enjoying yourselves. And don't take drugs, kids. All right? Don't take drugs. Unless it's apparently it's NZT, you can figure out how to be incredibly intelligent and still not have any side effects. But don't take drugs. Anyways, have a good one, everybody. Have a great day. And I'm excited to talk to you guys later. All right. Bye-bye now.
He summarizes his movies so that way you don't have to go pay for them or go to the movies, and you can just listen to them in your car with your downtime.